Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Boxhead Pod. My name is Howell. This is Jamie.
Hello.
And Matthew Wandless in London.
Good evening.
Difficult to no any longer call Matthew Wandless a guest on the podcast, but let's remain that way for now. Happy February to you. We're here. It's February. We haven't got our opening music as usual for technical reasons, which I won't go into because it's boring, but who knows? Maybe it's better without it. In fact, if you're a musician and you listen to this podcast, if you'd like to write us a new theme tune, why don't you do that? Pretty much.
If you could include some slap bass,
yeah,
that would be great.
Some Seinfeld slap bass, or I'll accept a Kimmy Schmidt style theme tune. I cannot imagine that anybody skips the intro on Kimmy Schmidt because of how good that is.
Great. Can't remember what it's
like. Unbreakable. They love, damn it.
Yes, I remember that, you know, there is a program out there. I can't remember what it's called, but someone was talking about it at work today, which will generate license-free ambient music for you. And you can even like do things like ask for specific crescendos at specific times. You can set beats per minute, tone.
Oh, this is supposed to make me happy, but it's depressing me so much.
It's a niche little product. It's a pretty good idea. It does. I'll get someone to generate us a theme tune.
Be careful.
Throw some keywords at me and give me some crescendo times and a BPM.
Be careful what you wish for,
boys.
We
don't really need musicians. No one at least needs to learn an instrument anymore. That's what I love.
My heart is breaking.
It's fantastic.
Be careful. Soon it'll be podcasts. You just say what you're interested in and then automatically opinionated conversation will happen.
Wikipedia and just give you a load of information.
Yeah, so this week I fell down a rabbit hole known as Twitter, right? And I've just got to tell this story because on the subject of like automated opinions. That's almost how I see social media now. So the story came out this week about Liam Neeson, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I won't repeat what he said, but Liam Neeson told a story about when he was so angry that he went out looking for a specific race of person to beat up with a cosh when a family member of his was raped. Now, that is a man who told a story. He used some racist language in his story, and he admitted in the story that he was ashamed of what he'd done and said back in the day when he was a young man in Ireland. Now, what then happened on Twitter was millions of tweets essentially saying, in the same way as you would about Donald Trump, who purposely says divisive things and isn't ashamed of them whatsoever, saying he should lose his job, we should boycott all Liam Neeson films, all of that. Can I ask what your two's take on this was, beginning with Matthew, as he spoke first there?
Well, it was I imagine it would be considered a poor PR move by Neeson, but ultimately he's telling a story about a stupid thing that he did, rather than defining his own ideology.
Disagree with that, Jamie? Go on, Matt.
Well, no, for me, it's an incredible reaction, an overreaction. Mm. And the fact that he's being called out by the likes of Piers Morgan, this just shows that, you know, if there is a God, he is not without a sense of irony.
You agree with that, Jamie?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I do think that talking about when you once had racist intentions to hurt somebody of a certain race to pay back for a crime, you know, admitting that you shouldn't expect to be rewarded for that. You shouldn't expect to be lauded as, he's admitting that he was, you know, he had these preconceived sort of prejudices. So it should, you're going to get a backlash for that. He had to see that coming. I know in the context of how he's trying to, he's talking about how unforgivable it was that he thought like that, but he's still admitting that in the past he thought in a certain way. So I think it's stupid of him to tell that story, and the way he told the story was stupid.
Well, I'm not sure.
Yes, I'd agree. It's unusual for someone who has spent that much time in the public eye to make such an obvious kind of PR gaffe in the presence of a journalist. It wasn't even like it was sort of found on his social media feed. He was sitting there with a journalist and told this story.
I suppose that's
But I think he did it to underscore the fact that you can't hold a people responsible for the actions of one person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in his simple mind, he was obviously just saying, he was talking about vengeance. The movie's about vengeance of some kind, and he said it's a very powerful thing, vengeance. Let me tell you a story about
I didn't even realise there was context like that. I just thought he was just telling the story like a Graham Norton
show. It was an interview about the film, him and Jason
Now,
Bateman.
Liam, we've got a funny story about a time when you were younger and you all got really pissed off at the black fella.
No, he was saying, you know...
Can you tell the story?
I didn't read this far back, but I imagine the question was along the lines of how do you tap into vengeance of that kind, or if this film is very cruel, a lot like The Punisher, which we'll come on to this evening, how do you justify that level of violence ever? And he was saying there is a time when I felt overwhelmed by vengeance and walked the street for nights looking for somebody to beat up. As somebody who had experience and, you know, an ex of mine went through sexual attacks, and I understand that completely. There's nothing that could stop me coshing a person if I had the chance, you know, in that time. People heard that story and went, I mean, even as a you're saying it's a bad PR move, and I think that's what's sad about the story.
But how you're missing the important point that he was specifically picking out one race of people to attack.
Yes. Yeah,
he wasn't looking for the person, he was looking for anyone who was similar to that person.
But that was him mentioning that was him saying, this is how mad it makes you, is that you can make a move that is as stupid as saying, I'm just going to, if it was about a Serbian person, I'm looking for the first Serbian person.
No, I understand, but the way you framed it a moment ago was not like that.
Right, I was just giving context to you for the why he was talking about it, he was trying to explain when something like that happens, this is what I did. So it wasn't just kind of out of the blue, here's a wacky anecdote about when I was a nut job. So anyway, I went on Twitter and I said, oh, look, somebody has just been told a story. A man has just told a story about when he was ashamed of something he did and said he was ashamed of it. And we are all then saying we should hang him up because he should be ashamed of it. And someone replied to me saying, oh, I used a word to describe him. Anyway, I got into an argument with a stranger on Twitter about it. And it was like immediately I was a racist because I was defending the racism. I wasn't defending the racism at all. I was attacking the way that we react on social media to things. And if we don't allow for a grey area to say, well, like you said, Jamie, it's a bad PR move to admit to something. But that we've heard millions of stories from people in the past where they've said, well, once upon a time, I was a shoplifter and I did this thing that I'm not proud of. And this is the reason
I
did it.
Or I was a drug dealer. But those aren't about an underlying ideology. I can understand where the backlash has come from. I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
But when you align yourself with a certain set of values, you have to expect that, which is why I'm saying that it's a bad PR move.
Now, that is a great discussion. That's a great point that you just made. And I listen to that point and I learn from that point. And that's what you cannot do on social media. And
well, it's certainly not on Twitter. Like, there's no you're right, there's no grey area on Twitter. So it's the idea that anything you put out into the public, like Liam Neeson telling that story, you're not going to get a nuanced kind of, a mixture of opinions that are all kind of understanding where it comes from. In the world we live in today. Well, not in social media, you
will. You will. You'll get it there as well, but you'll get it from 2-3% of them.
That's the issue. Yeah. And I was talking to my students a couple of weeks ago. I've got this class of students that find it very...
Hold on a second. What are you teaching them?
Radio, believe it or not.
Pardon?
Radio.
Oh. Okay, well, all right, fine.
That's all right.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah.
They're incredibly, they find it difficult to be proactive. I just cannot get them to do what they need to do. And I sort of had a bit of a sort of cards on the...
To go youth of today. You can't teach them anything.
No.
They don't want to do anything.
No, just this class. But I had, okay. I had a good chat with them and said, you know, why, you tell me, why is it that you find it so difficult? And one of them said, if you're a young person now, you are expected to be on the right side immediately of everything. You can't make a mistake. You've got to be on the right side of trans rights, whatever that is. As soon as you make a statement, you're told that that is incorrect and you are immediately attacked for it if you get it wrong.
When you say whatever that is, what are you referring to?
Whatever their opinion is.
Are you referring to what the right side is?
No. Whatever you say, they feel like, whatever they say, somebody else will immediately tell them that they're wrong. And because there's no learning involved in that, they just feel like, meanwhile, they're all trying to be on the right side of all these liberal points of view. In the real world, Trump and Brexit are happening. Like, the only people who are actually actively doing anything are the people on the far right. Everyone else is arguing about the correct way to say things, but not doing anything. And they're almost like, the world is crumbling around us, and we can't say anything right because you have to know the answer before you even say anything. And that's the thing about...
Well, this has always been the problem with the left wing versus the right, is the right can get their shit together.
Yeah, they actually do something. Yeah.
The left wing spend too long arguing about how best to do it.
And now the left wing have found...
Because we're all so goddamn polite.
Yeah, and we've found this place. The left wing have found their energy is being put into social media, which is just people writing things on their phone while everybody else is doing
stuff. I'm about to coin a phrase.
Yeah.
Say what you like about arseholes, they get shit done.
Yeah. Did you just make that up? Because that works on every level.
I just made it up and I realised very good. Pat on the back for myself.
So anyway.
Like, definitely not in like Team America or something. It feels like something that...
That's about dicks fucking arseholes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, that, by the way, that is what I got in the argument about. The actual original tweet that I wrote was, Liam Neeson has just told a story of when he behaved like a dick and said he was ashamed of it, and now we're all calling him a dick. Social media is just a polemic of opinion. And someone it messaged me saying he wasn't being a dick, he was being a racist lunatic. And I said, well, I don't discern between, I think that if you're racist, you're a dick. So I think that's dickish behaviour. And it became an argument about what I meant, not the, it was just ridiculous. I ended up making friends with this person on direct message. I said, will you just follow me so that I can send you a direct message?
Can I just say, this whole thing isn't without context at all, because a lot of people... the key thing about this is that he volunteered this story. It wasn't
recorded.
I heard a story about you being racist, and he was trying to explain it away.
Mm-hmm.
He volunteered it.
Yes,
but the same get out has been used for people who have been accused of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and they've said, "Yeah, no, it was a dark time for me, and I've come
first.
Through it."
Yes, yeah.
But you still did it.
Totally. And I'm not saying that he's a great guy, and I don't know. I don't know what his mindset is. And certainly you've pointed out a couple of times that the grey area in this is how much did he really think this was a good story to tell? And therefore, why did he think that was a good story to tell? But he went on Good Morning America today, I think, and did an interview and basically said the same. He said, listen, if I didn't actually say, he was quoted on social media as saying, was the person black? He didn't. He said, what colour was the person? Similar thing, but not what everyone was quoting that he said. And he said, at the time, if they had said he was Armenian, I would have looked for any Armenian, because that's how mad I was, and that's how... You know, that's how the sort of troubles made us think in such tribal ways in Northern Ireland, that's the way I behaved. And it was a really good answer. It was a good explanation. I don't know. Whatever Liam Neeson is, I don't know. The point is that once I was direct messaging the person who was arguing about semantics, we were able to sort of agree that Twitter doesn't allow us to have a proper conversation. So all of this was because I really can see us getting to a point where you can have a bloody app that creates a podcast just of extreme opinions. You just tell it what you want and it'll go, yeah, I'm against Trump. I'm for him. And we won't need to have debate anymore because debate is dying fast. We're just in our silos shouting to our own echo chamber. And that is the end of the world, people. Good night.
Yeah. Mm. That's all we have time for in the Box Set Pod.
That's right. Yeah. 15 minutes. That's it. Sorry.
Jeez.
So, I finished watching Kidding, Jamie.
Right, yeah. What do you think?
I think it's one of my favourite TV series ever. I think it's wonderful. you know, I've mentioned on this podcast recently that I developed a fairly strong cancer phobia last year, which I've got a grip of. But one of the things that I realised during that was that we very, very rarely see cancer being dealt with in a... is positive the word? In a sort of, here's an artistic look, here's a poetic look at a situation like that. And I don't want to give anything away, but there is an episode of this where they deal with what is still to love about the world and why such bad things as that have to exist in order for us to love the world. And it's the way that it's put and the way it's written and the way it's performed and the song that they have at that point. I think it's just one of the greatest bits of telly.
I knew you'd love it.
Oh, and the end, the very last 5 minutes of the series is amazing. The arc of the series is amazing. It's just brilliant. It's just a brilliant, brilliant, beautiful piece of television, which I found a lot more stomachable digestible than Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. That almost felt like a warm-up to this. That felt very miserable and very dark. This feels a lot more comic.
What?
Well, it's pretty sad. It's pretty hard work. I mean, Jim Carrey is dragging himself through some serious depression, isn't he, in Eternal Sunshine. Whereas,
yeah, I guess, but Kate Winslet's pretty wonderful. I mean, she is the kind of definition of the, what's that term, fantastic pixie something.
I can't remember.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
The woman that's there to fix a man.
All right. Yeah,
But it's still a nice film.
Well, I think the difference in this one is that you're watching a guy who probably is seriously depressed, but is completely in denial of that, and therefore you're waiting for this time bomb to go off, and that the energy that gives and the comedy that provides. You know, you just start a scene and there's like a trashed lamp on the floor next to him and you don't see how it happened and he doesn't seem to know how it happened. And then the scene just starts and it's about something else and it's like, oh, something's going on here. It's just brilliant. Jamie, I just love it. I could, if this series doesn't carry on for three series, I'll be absolutely gutted. It's so good.
Yeah, it's due to have a second series, so there's more coming. Well, but are you tempted by this then, Matt?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'll have a go.
I love it. If you like Michel Gondry, and I can't see how you wouldn't enjoy this.
Michel Gondry?
The guy who directed Eternal Sunshine.
Oh, right, sorry. No, I couldn't tell you another film he's done.
He did music videos, didn't he, Jamie?
He did. Before Adaptation. An adaptation with Nicolas Cage playing twins.
Adaptation, that's a film I don't know how I feel about.
Yeah, me too. But that's where I mean, think he's...
Charlie Kaufman, you know.
That's where I think he's really got to this point. This is almost like watching all of my favourite things. It's like the Muppets adaptation. It's great. Go on, Jamie.
Sorry, do you like... just trying to think of other things he's done, Michel Gondry. I don't think he'd be in John Malkovich. That was Spike Jones, wasn't it? So,
it's very much in that world normally. And the way this is written is it's got a lighter touch. I find it difficult to watch three of these things back to back because it's so good and it makes you think so philosophically that it's quite a lot of work. But it's not the same. It's not a sort of miserable work, you know. It's just lovely.
This is on Netflix, right?
No, it'll be on your whatever your Murdoch device is. Now TV, if you've got it.
Okay, yeah, I've got that.
Yeah, Kidding.
And is it a drama?
It's a comedy. It's a dark comedy. So
yeah, I mean, it's not a comedy like an out-and-out comedy like The Good Place or something like that. It's not like
that. What could you compare it with, Jamie? Maybe a bit closer to a Wes Anderson, maybe a bit closer to that than your regular mainstream stuff, I suppose.
It's quirky, is it?
Yeah, but it's still
a very hard show to compare.
Yeah, I mean, it's still very straight. It's still linear narrative mostly, and it's, you know, the structure isn't nuts. It's accessible, but it's really beautifully done, and it takes imaginative leaps. So, for example, at one point, somebody could be having a conversation with somebody else, but their mouth isn't moving, and you can just hear their voice. And in reality, they're not really talking, but you know that they know what each other are thinking. Or there's little breaks in stuff that work. It doesn't make you go, stupid. It's just really subtly and lovely done. So do you remember the setup of it, Matt?
No.
So essentially, Mr. Pickles is a children's TV presenter.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He's like the Letterman of everybody knows him, and something very tragic has happened to him, and his dad is the executive producer of this show, and it's the size of Oprah. And his dad's character, played by Jamie? Yeah.
His dad's played by Frank Langella.
Is one of those...
Very good.
Robot and Frank.
Yeah.
Robot and Frank?
Yeah.
Is that the
Robot and Frank. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, and he's in Frost Nixon as well as Nixon.
Yes. Yeah. And it's one of the most nuanced... It's one of the best characters of like old men that you've ever seen, and you're kind
brilliant.
Of unsure about
I
what you think
doing,
about
him. Lear.
Did you?
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It was all right.
Just all right. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
Well, his character in this is just so fascinating. You're not sure what you think, and it's, he's kind of playing a studio boss. So on the one hand, every decision he's making seems to be something that traditionally we should be going, oh, he's the money guy, he's the bad guy. But on the other hand, there's loads of logic attached to what he's saying, and it's just brilliant. It's brilliant. So watch it, yeah. Kidding. Can't recommend it highly enough. Love it.
Yeah, it's quirky and poignant, which are two hard things to do together. And It's definitely, there's some really lovely lines in it. I was trying to remember, there's a few lines in the show that are just wonderful. And when I heard them, I was like, oh, wow, that's such a great way of phrasing something. But I can't remember it, so it doesn't matter. But it's full of lovely little nuggets of wiseness.
I had exactly the same thought. I remember watching the last episode last night and thinking, oh, I should write that line down. It's so, so good. Oh, it's just lovely. It's almost like you could dislike this series, but also say, you know, maybe you hate Jim Carrey or whatever. You could dislike it, but you couldn't criticise it for not being absolutely consistent with itself, you know?
Absolutely, and I think Jim Carrey's brilliant in it. Like, you know, it's great to see him do something like this, and I think he works really well with Michelle Gondry. Like, I heard an interview with him where he spoke about how they have quite a, you know, a tempestuous relationship.
Oh, really?
Working together,
I think they
do kind of butt heads a little bit, but it tends to bring out the best in each other. And
have you seen the documentary he did about Man on the Moon?
So good.
Oh.
I've been meaning to watch it for a while. I haven't seen it.
Have you not?
Is it called Being Andy?
Jim and Andy, it's called. Jim and Andy.
Jim and Andy, right.
It's so good. It's one of my favourite documentaries, that as well. I mean, because I think you can watch that. Some people watch that and say, I think Jim Carrey's actually insane. I watch it and go, I agree with his worldview in 100% on this. I think he's got the answer to the meaning of life.
Well, you do feel a little bit sorry for him, though, don't you? Because there's an element of he's not really happy in this time in his life. He didn't seem very happy.
Yes.
And you get that sense, anyway.
Have you seen his episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
Yes.
Brilliant. Yes.
Joyous.
That's fucking weird, man.
Yeah. But he just, like, I think he's a man, and this is what I mean, Jamie, not when he was making that film. I've got a different relationship with him then, but now when he's looking back at it and the view he's got on life. I mean, one of the things he kind of says, basically, is... When we all, what we all don't realize is that we're sort of fearing and counting down the days to death. And in our last few moments, we'll realize that it was all a joke. Oh, there's nothing to worry about. And we'll have the most amazing sense of relief in the last 4 seconds, you know. And I think he really has, and he's sort of has that attitude when you see him in Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. It's like he's not necessarily sticking his face in everyone, gurning in everyone's face, but he does seem to genuinely be living his life to try and be as happy as he can every day and just, you know.
Yeah, but he seems like a bit of a freaking nut job as well.
Well, maybe watching that documentary will answer that.
He seems boring as hell after an hour as well.
Well, a lot of comedians are. I used to live with one, and he used to watch me watch TV.
No, for different reasons, though.
It was tedious.
He comes across pretty wanky in that Comedians in Cars.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, this was like the most famous man on the planet for a few years. The best played man in Hollywood.
I know, but so is Seinfeld, and Seinfeld doesn't come across like that.
Yes, but Seinfeld's personality wasn't this one forced into... you know, trying to appear like nothing matters in the world. Seinfeld was the opposite. Seinfeld was embodying the cynic, the stand-up neurotic. Comic, you know, neurotic. And so Jim Carrey had to deal with the fact that he either had to divorce himself from this character that he created that had become the most famous character ever, or continue with it. And he sort of, that's why he sort of went off the scene, because he just went, I cannot continue in this mode anymore. And he almost says that that's the reason why he ended up embodying Andy Kaufman completely, was that was the only way that he could approach this part, was to like become him. It was just so, anyway, watch it. Jim and Andy, kidding, both of them brilliant. And in terms of what I said about consistency of kidding, you can't question that it's true to itself. That is something that you could question when we came to the second series of True Detective, which didn't feel like it hung together as well as the first series. We're now on to series 3. I haven't watched it because the second series annoyed me so much, but you two have both started it. There's my segue into True Detective. Jamie?
Yes, it is back on track. It's very, very, very much trying to get back to the first series, that first series feel of a murder mystery, of two detectives working together to solve a crime, missing children in this case, flashing back to the crime itself, and then back 10 years after the crime, and then to present day, looking at the sort of documentary that's being made about this crime 30 years on, and the detectives who are still alive. And it's got a great cast. It's got Mahershala Ali, who's an Oscar winner from House of Cards. He's also nominated for the Green Book, and he's a brilliant actor. He's really good. And the makeup for his old man makeup is brilliant.
Phenomenal. The best old man makeup I've ever seen.
Do you think it's CGI'd or what?
I think it's just done with makeup. It's really good.
Yeah. Wow.
Brilliant.
Nice.
Does it make you like me want to see him play Mandela instead of Idris Elba? I think that would be better.
Well, I haven't seen Idris Elba's, but...
Nor have I, but there's a reason, right, that we both haven't seen it. Neither of us are sitting here going, oh man, Idris Elba is Mandela, that makes sense.
Matt's jealous because he went for the part and he didn't get it, and Idris Elba did.
Not even close.
Can you do an impression of Mandela, Matt?
I'm sure I could, but I'm not going to.
Jamie, I bet Jamie can. Yeah. Go on, Jamie.
I am not going to do that.
Flipping heck.
I'm not doing that.
Boys.
My Mandela is very similar to the one in Harry Enfield's show.
Okay. So, Jamie, it's back on track. Matt, have you watched it all?
No, it's not all out yet, is it?
No.
Oh.
I've only seen the first two episodes.
And I think there's five episodes in, but yeah, I'm only two in as well. I'm trying to let it build a bit of momentum before I go deep diving in.
I tell you what, though, when was the last time you saw Stephen Dorff?
That's a great question.
Who's Stephen Dorff? That rings a bell.
I have no idea what he has done between Blade and now.
Yeah, I mean, that was the last thing I was thinking of, Blade.
Yeah, but whatever he's done, I ain't seen it or heard of it.
Yeah.
No clue. And I liked him in Blade. I thought he was great.
And he's done a good job in this so far. I'm quite liking his work. It's good to see him.
Yeah, I liked his leather punching people gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, if I was going to punch people, I'd have a special pair of gloves for
a special pair of leather gloves.
I've no idea who Stephen
Dorff
is.
These are my punching people gloves.
I've even just Googled Stephen Dorff and I don't recognise him, so there we go.
He's the bad guy in Blade.
That's right. So,
he was in Blade?
No.
Howl?
Yeah.
For a while, he was going to be the new Christian Bale. He was like the heartthrob. The big pin-up star of...
Swerve for a moment. Has either of you seen Vice?
No.
No.
You know what it is. Right. Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney. It's brilliant. Loved it. Loved it.
Good.
Go and see it. Carry on.
I like the theme they're continuing. I think they decided that what was missing from True Detective Series 2 was an Oscar-winning or nominated actor... talking so low and gruffly that you can't understand 60% of what they're saying.
I'll tell you what they also decided they were missing was some sort of tiny little creepy doll or wooden effigy left at the crime scene because once again they've added that to the mix. As soon as I saw the wooden little doll thing, I thought, oh, please don't go down this route again. But it doesn't matter. It's just, it's another kind of mirror of the first series in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Where was the second,
go on.
No, sorry, go.
I was going to say, where was the second series set? Was it in California?
I don't think so.
It was meant to be in a fictional place, in LA called Da Vinci, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh.
That's the other thing that they've done with this one is take it back to the kind of...
Deep South,
American Midwest, or the Deep South, isn't it? Sorry, this is Alabama.
I think it's the Ozarks, isn't it? It's set in the Ozarks, I think.
No, that's Missouri. I think this is in Alabama because they mentioned. I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure now because they mentioned Little Rock the other day, which I thought was in Alabama, but now I'm thinking it might be in Missouri. But anyway, it's just I don't know if I talk to you guys about how much stuff we're seeing set in Middle America.
No, you didn't, and I'm guessing it's tax reasons, yeah?
Does that strike you as true?
I think yes, you're probably right, and it'll be for one of two reasons, tax reasons, or suddenly the world has realised that there's people who live in Middle America and they've decided elections, so why not go for them as an audience?
Well, yeah, this is what I tend to subscribe to, that idea.
In the same way,
I can't think of anything other than this and Ozark that's set in Middle America.
I
was thinking about documentaries as well. I was thinking about things like Wild Wild Country, which is much more Midwest. But
Breaking Bad was the forerunner, of course.
Making a Murderer.
Yeah.
All these kind of stuff about Hicks.
Yes.
And rednecks.
Yeah.
Sharp Objects as well.
I do think it's harsh. Did you ever see Rich, what's his name? Rich, a Texan comedian. American.
Oh, Rich
Hall.
Yeah.
Did you see his documentary about the about Texas?
No.
It's really good, worth hunting down, and he essentially says how, once you notice it in everything. He essentially says, if you're from Texas, you're used to every single part in any film that's the bad guy is from Texas or the Deep South. And that they've always been played as, idiots or deliverance or the bad guys. And it's always the Southern accent that they bring out for it. And I really realized my own prejudice when I went to Austin and then and went to Houston and went to the Southern states and just loved it. Just thought it was one of the...
Yeah.
I just love it. It makes sense.
Oh, man, I badly want to go to Texas. I really do.
It's brilliant.
Texas and... New Orleans, I really want to go to.
Oh, New Orleans is my favourite place on earth, I think. And Austin is just a fantastic city. And granted, Houston and Austin are the only places that didn't vote Trump. But it's a good example of where that approach to liberalism, as in, kind of free market liberalism, the cowboy approach, is really makes sense in those parts. And they're not stupid people, they're smart people. And it's a really great state for lots of reasons. So, yes, we are prejudiced against that stuff, I think.
But I think a lot of the reason that these shows are set in that particular area is because there's a lot of small-town communities and a lot of these fascinating murder-based dramas really kind of
suit the small
have a
town.
Lot more weight when they're set in these small communities, and you see that, and certainly look at Making a Murderer, and you look at Wild Wild Country. That, there's something about these little places that end up having the world turned upside down by an event.
Yeah, and I suppose the arrival of HD and the budgets that we see in online streaming means that gone is the day, really, of like, I think the entire 6-7 series of Gilmore Girls was clearly filmed on the Warner Brothers lot, or Friends, whenever they do an outside scene, it's clearly on the Warner Brothers, like, they all use the same sets and everything. You can't really get away with that anymore, so location makes more sense, and they can perhaps afford it more now. And plus, you're not making, you know, 21 episodes in a lot of those series. You're making something more akin to a movie, so you go for the reality in camera stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
I think back to this series.
Yeah, is it really worth my effort, boys? That's what I want to know. Is it worth it?
I think it is.
Annoyed me. That's
it. Feels like you're at the start of something. It feels like you're diving into a deep pool.
Yes. Cool. And the initial waves of water that touch your toes may feel a little trepidatious, but you know that as you dunk your torso in, you'll really enjoy the warm feeling of the waters as they soothe your rib cage, to continue that analogy. But I mean, the interesting part of this one is that the older version of Mahershala's character, the one in present day, is clearly suffering from dementia, and that's an interesting twist on his memories of the crime, and his memories of that time in his life are slightly skewed by his own sort of struggle with his own sort of dementia. So there's an interesting look at it in that respect.
There's it's nice to see things like that being explored and represented, etc., when it's done properly. I am getting slightly annoyed at people shoving into scripts topical campaign activist stuff. It does feel, I don't know whether you've noticed it, but in almost everything that I see at the moment, if it's not, you know, Handmaid's Tale is a great example of female leads doing female story written by a woman. Kimmy Schmidt is another one of my favourites. Great, 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 great. And then there's the pasted in lines that keep popping up that kind of go, well, obviously you can do that because you're a man and you've had all the power for the last 2,000 years. And then they move on. And it just really annoys me when stuff gets sort of crowbarred in that's the latest thing because they think that they have to. It happened in that film Vice, Dick Cheney. There's a scene early on where his wife kind of tells him to make something of himself or go for it, whatever. And there's just this line that says something. This is like in the 50s or 60s or whatever. And she's the housewife figure. And she says, I can't do this because clearly I'm a woman and now's not the time, but you need to go for it for the sake of the family. And she got, as if she said that, as if she ever said that. It doesn't do the cause any good just to copy and paste in something when the entire film is about men and male leads. Just if you're going to do that, just make it about Dick Cheney. You don't need to be scoring points. Anyway, so yeah, nice to see dementia represented, which is a modern problem.
Well, I think it's also the idea that there's always a character in the True Detectives, in the original one, Matthew McConaughey's character has issues with his own memory and his own brain because of the drug taking that he's had in his past as an undercover detective. So I think it's also just a device he's using, the writer Nick Pizzoletto or whatever he's called, to make this a more intriguing journey for the detective to discover what went on in the original investigation.
I will check it out. Let's move on to Punisher. Matthew's been going on about Punisher recently, and I struggled with the first series. My wife and I sort of left it alone a few episodes into the first series. Now, I've started watching it in that time after my wife goes to bed. That's been my thing. And I've just got to the end of the first episode or the second episode of the new series, so I'm only that far.
Oh, right. So you've steamed right through the whole thing.
I have steamed through it in the last week.
Did you enjoy the climax of the first series?
Yes, I did very much.
Okay, cool.
And now in terms of violence, there's you know, I am unsure where I stand. If I was on social media, I wouldn't know which end to take on this one. But flipping heck. I mean, yeah. Two observations.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, isn't it?
One, it's absolutely extreme violence. And number two, there's this noise that John, what's his name, makes. That's it. And that I use the exact
same. Apologies, listeners.
It really stands out. If you listen to the Adventures of Brian Hovis story, there is a part where Brian Hovis is snaps his shin, and I pasted in the sound of the actor making that exact noise about four times for comic effect, and now I can't watch Punisher without noticing it. And they really do. Often the guy he's fighting makes the same noise. It's very funny. But yeah, really good. I like it, but I'm not sure I stand with it, Matt. It's like, do I dislike this guy now? I mean,
this is the beauty of the character is that he's a contradiction, and you're never entirely sure where you stand with the Punisher, and
which is fine for a series,
as a comic book character and as the TV show character. I think that's why this is the best one. It's one of the most true to the comics in terms of its character portrayal.
But don't you feel that that's true for a first series? And then a second series, where essentially you have to kind of just reset the anger, I suppose. It doesn't that then become, actually, we're watching it to see him beat the hell out of bad guys in a bad way?
No, because, I don't want to give too much away, but at the beginning of the new series, Billy Russo, the bad guy from the first series, is in a sort of convalescent state where he's trying to get his strength back up, and he's lost a lot of his memory.
Yeah, we got a bit of a Harvey Two-Face situation, haven't we? Or sort of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
not really. Yes and no. But loosely.
Not really Two-Face, except the fact he's wearing a mask.
He's wearing a mask.
But the first time the two of them meet in the series, Billy still doesn't know what's gone on between him and Frank. Right. And so you're in an interesting situation where Frank, you know, the Punisher is just going to kill this guy because of what he is, but the guy doesn't know what he is. Mm. So he's, and then Frank finds himself wrestling with the idea of whether he should kill him or not. So it's not as straightforward as that. And they've actually drawn some fairly interesting lines in terms of what he should and shouldn't do, how it affects the people around him.
Great.
So I think it's worth exploring in this one. I mean, to a certain extent, I'm saying this stuff, but I kind of don't feel as interested in this series as I did in the first.
Okay.
Because the first series felt much more important in that he was trying to find out who murdered his family. And that felt like such a kind of apex goal for him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this one, he's kind of found himself in this incidental situation with this girl, Amy, and he's protecting her out of some, you know, sense of his own justice, but also just because he wanted to be back in that life, having been out of it for a while.
Yes.
But ultimately, the issues in this one, the problems he's facing, don't feel as important as they did in the first one. And I found myself drifting a little bit while watching it.
Isn't this a challenge with comic book stuff on TV in long-running things? Because essentially comic books, you pick up in the same way that you used to watch traditional TV shows that could run forever. You watch Quantum Leap because you know he's going to be put in a new situation and you're going to see that he deals with it in a certain way. Comics you read because the Punisher each week will pick someone who we think deserves it, but we wouldn't have the guts to beat them up, and he beats them up for us. Whereas on TV, we now want when you do the Christopher Nolan turn and you start saying it's not going to be light stuff, it's not going to be easy stuff, we need arcs, and the only place you can ultimately end up is these characters developing, learning about themselves, and then you end up with Batman versus Superman arguing with their own moral quandaries. Isn't that the problem with aren't we reaching that point of saturation because these characters, if you think of Daredevil, these characters get to a point you can't move them on because you have to try and keep them in the same situation, but you want to move them on?
I think you might actually have something there, Hal.
Can you just say that? Can we just stop for a moment while Matt won this? Can you just say that again? Because I've wanted to hear you say that.
You might actually have something there, Hal.
Whoa.
Because
right. This is the last podcast we'll ever do. I've achieved.
The movies do seem to work better for this stuff.
Yeah.
I certainly haven't been impressed with Marvel's stable of TV shows yet. I think there have been standout series, Jessica Jones Series 1, Punisher Series 1, and to a lesser extent, Daredevil Series 1.
Yeah.
But they do all feel fatty.
Yeah. Same with the Avengers and all that. It's like...
Well, no, I disagree with you about that. I think the movies have actually gotten better and gone from strength to strength.
Oh, okay.
They've changed the way they had a couple of duds in there, but I think they've actually weeded out the things that made those films duds.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the last six or seven that have been released, I think have all had a kind of cogent voice, storytelling style, and self-deprecating sense of humor, which has made all of them pretty well, seven or above.
So, do you know what? It's almost like the James Bond quandary as well, which is that you know what you're getting with James Bond. It's the reason I love the new Wonder Woman, because it's like...
Well, I don't think it is, actually. I don't think the two bear comparison at all.
Well, I'll do
it. Because Bond reinvents himself every time.
Ah, no, but that's what I'm talking about.
You're saying as opposed to the Daniel Craig one, where there is some flow through.
Yes, exactly. So the Daniel Craig one, where can that end other than Bond getting better in some way, you know, getting over his psychological flaws, whereas in the Roger Moore days, a bit like the Gal Gadot Wonder Woman, you have a mission, and every film is going to be a mission. We need to get to the enemy lines and do this. Great, that's why I opened the book. James Bond, there's this bad guy now. We're going to go after this guy. If you ask me to start looking into their soul and for those characters to change, that's great for a few, but where can Daniel Craig take it, you know, five in? It's really difficult before you undo that character.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but they can just reset Bond. They don't need to finish off Daniel Craig's Bond.
Yeah. But it's all Christopher Nolan's
fault. And if they
think
they do that, I think they're making a mistake.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't think that using these characters to examine complex topics is a waste of time.
Mm.
I think it's something that should be pursued and can be done very, very well.
I agree. I just think it's short-lived. I'm just saying it's got a shelf life that you can't carry on exploring that well in the same way that you can with something that resets really easily every time.
Yeah.
But it's nice for now.
But Jamie, what do you think of Series 2?
Yeah, I sort of agree. It was a bit... It's not as good as Series 1. I'm not as interested. I did watch it. I finished it. I find it's definitely one of the better. Oh, really? Okay. I find it's definitely the best of the Marvel outlet on Netflix. But I don't know if this will get a third series. It'll be interesting because I'm guessing they're going to be watching very closely how it does streaming-wise to whether they continue it or not. But I wouldn't be surprised if it gets cancelled. And if it does, then I'd be sad, but... I could see why, like you said, Howell, they have a certain shelf life, these kind of shows that demand a certain amount of sort of depth to them. So it wouldn't be the end of the world. But he is very good at it, John Bernthal, even though it's quite a two-dimensional role at times.
The
script is horrendous at times. There are some really bad scripts. And it's extremely violent. But at the same time, I always watch it. I always watch to the end,
yeah.
And I always stay gripped.
It is Marvel, isn't it? Yeah,
because I spend a lot of time kind of getting annoyed by it, but I don't stop watching it. So,
what's the deal with even... because Marvel's disappeared off Netflix because Disney's setting up its own doodah. How come Punisher's still on it? Does anyone know?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think they all had two series. But I think they just probably started making Punisher before. And Punisher did well. Series 1 did well on Netflix.
Right.
So that's why they made a second
one. We can presume that that's going to migrate as well when Disney start a new Marvel doodah, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I'm not sure where Punisher would fit in the Disney world.
Well, that's the other question, and I can only presume that they're going to have a door. You know, there's going to be a specific Marvel thing, I would imagine. But it, yeah, it doesn't.
The thing with,
it doesn't fit.
The thing with the Punisher that I find gripping is retribution. I think it is. I do like vengeance sometimes. Mm. I like the film Equalizer with Denzel Washington because I really, even though it's a pretty average film, I do quite like...
Do you know
like,
what's better is Man on Fire, though?
Oh, yeah, no, Man on Fire is great.
This is quite a short film.
It's not retribution, is it? That's Manhunt kind of territory, isn't it?
What's the film with Joaquin Phoenix that I watched this weekend that's all retribution? It's on.
Oh, did you watch... what's it called? I know what you mean.
It's on Prime, I think.
The Lynn Ramsey film.
Yeah.
It's called... Oh, I've got to get this.
Damn it. Find it, someone, because it's great.
Oh, it's just the one where it's his face kind of...
You were never really there. You were never really here. Yeah.
It's really good.
Is that the one?
Yeah, loved it. Short as well. It was great. Well done, them. Turns out you can tell a story in like an hour 20. Who knew? Amazing. John Bernthal makes a cameo on which Netflix comedy series?
Ooh,
for 10 points.
Netflix comedy series.
Time's up, I'm afraid.
Kimmy Schmidt.
It's correct. Did you just Google it?
No.
Yeah, Kimmy Schmidt. Watched every episode now. That series is finished, and I have loved every second of it. Jamie, you quit it. Why did you quit it?
I think I lost interest. I think I wasn't sure I was bothered anymore about the plot. I mean, I thought the characters were still funny, but I just lost interest. I don't know why.
I think you have to pick it up again and remember that you're watching it to watch jokes, because there's more jokes in that per second than anything else I've seen, I think. And you have to be quite awake to watch it. Maybe having a young child may have affected you.
It is one of those shows that it's sort of so in your face.
Yeah.
You kind of lose... By the time you might be laughing at something, but then you've missed a million things, and then you kind of go, oh, where are we now? And then...
There's some
you kind of end up trying to concentrate rather than trying to enjoy it.
The way they wrap up the characters
didn't do anything
and stuff,
for me.
Oh, what a shame! I urge you try again because it's just gag, and the way they take the characters in terms of the extremes. You know, if Titus is sort of uber self obsessed, he becomes 20 times more self-obsessed before he learns anything. You know, it's very funny.
I've been rewatching Parks and Rec, and God, I bloody love Ron Swanson.
That show is a big winner.
Do you know how gutted was I when I realised I came in to record my Excess Manchester radio shows a couple of weeks ago, and that is in Spinningfields in Manchester. And about 200 metres away is the very, very old John Ryland's library, which is a beautiful old library. And Ron Swanson, while I was here, was there. And I didn't notice until I saw Instagram later that day.
No.
Wow, that's terrible.
I could have gone and met Nick Thingy. Forgotten his name.
Ottoman.
You know what as well? I realised I was watching Graham Norton the other night, and I realised that show has given me an almost kind of drainable pool of affection for Chris Pratt.
Yes.
I don't think he can really do anything wrong in my
Can put up with him in the biggest beefed up sellout movie that he can possibly pick and still, but I'm just always waiting for him to make that
just
gag.
Like, hi, Sandy.
I mean, Jurassic Park. Did anyone watch the latest Jurassic Park one?
I didn't.
No.
I mean,
I haven't seen any of the Jurassic World films.
What we were saying guys, earlier you've got
to go.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
My apologies.
Well, Fargo, Mad Men, Kidding, and Kimmy Schmidt are now in my top 10 ever. So if you can watch any of them before next time, yeah, do it. Thank you, Matt.
Goodbye. Thank you.
I think we're done, to be honest. Off. No worries. But you go.
Okay.
Jamie and I'll wrap up. Right. Off you pop.
Bye.
God, don't you hate Matthew? Flipping, right?
Yeah, it stinks the room out.
Glad he's gone. Russian Doll, we didn't talk about that. That's new. I've not seen it. Have you?
we need to do that next week. Russian Doll, everybody's talking about it. It's getting critically acclaimed. It's a show that's been created by Natasha Lyonne, and who's from Orange Is the New Black, and Amy Poehler, of course, from Parks and Rec. So
yeah, I started it. She definitely, as an actress, as a part. I've got to say, I'm not a huge fan in Orange Is the New Black. I was never a huge. She wasn't my favourite. Let's put it that way. But you know,
what have you said? Did you say you've started? Russian Doll?
I watched some of the first episode so far, I think.
Okay. Let's deep dive next week into that. We'll talk Walking Dead's return as well.
Game of Thrones is coming back, and my wife interviewed Arya Stark for the TV.
Yes.
Maisie thingy. Williams, is it? No. Maisie. Yeah. So that was nice. That was exciting. The day she went to interview Maisie, she had a small amount of time with her, and she said, I'm going to have to ask you about Game of Thrones. And Maisie said, well, it's only your time you're wasting.
Ooh,
but I think it's more, down. I think she meant, don't ask me because I can't give anything away. And one other thing I urge you to watch if you've not seen it. Two things. One, if you've not watched the Adam Sandler Live on Netflix, have you watched that yet, Jamie?
Yeah.
Brilliant, eh? Isn't it great?
Very good. It's very good, yeah.
And Ellen has returned to stand-up after so many years, and you don't really realise how big Ellen is until you go to the United States. I've been on her set. I've done a movie tour at Warner Brothers. Anyway, she is back doing stand-up, and it is brilliant, and you realise why she is the wonderful person that she is. So I urge you to watch that. It will make you happy. It's great. That's it. If you want to email us, as usual, nobody emails us. So if you do, we will read it. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Especially if you are either a computer or a human that can write music, you're more than welcome to write us a new theme tune. Thank you. See you in a couple of weeks. Cheers, Jamie.
Right, see you, bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.